That song goes out to Chuck Healy and Hank Elizik. So glad you made it. Guys, thanks for joining us. Big chunk of time talking about the CFL here in the Drew Marshall Show. We talk about sports once a year, and today's the day. Folks, if you don't know who Chuck Healy is, then you're new, basically. He is a hero to many, a star to none. Chuck Healy, Grey Cup winning all-star CFL quarterback, Hamilton Tire Cats, Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and Toronto Argonauts. What a story. We'll talk more about his story in just a little bit here, but also introducing for the first time on the Drew Marshall Show, a buddy of mine named, how do you say that? Honk? Is it German? What is that?
It's actually Slovenian, Austrian. Call me whatever you like.
Hank Elizik, Grey Cup winning, all-star CFL, NFL, punter, kicker, Edmonton Eskimos, Toronto Argonauts, San Diego Chargers, Hamilton Tiger Cats, BC Lions, Edmonton Eskimos. He was a troubled child and sent around to various teams.
Just an orphan looking for a home.
When was the last time you guys saw each other or talked to each other?
Probably a couple years.
Yeah, a couple years.
Was it at the 100th Grey Cup thing that...
Probably. That was it.
I think we all saw each other that night. Yeah.
Yeah.
I snuck in the back.
Yeah.
Who's got more rings?
Probably Hank.
Nope.
What do you mean, no?
How many?
As a player?
Well, somebody told me that some rings went missing.
Well, yes. They all went missing.
That's kind of what I'm getting at. Did you know that?
No.
Tell them the story.
I think it was maybe in 2000. Someone actually broke into my house. They found my rings, and they're gone.
They're all gone.
They never turned up.
Well, you know what? I got a better story.
What? You've got the rings?
No. Not quite. I was playing racquetball. We were talking about playing racquetball, and somebody broke into my locker, took my ring and my watch out of my locker, and it was gone. And I put a little ad. Talked to the news people, and I said my.
When you say ring, your wedding ring or your.
Well, both, but it was my wedding ring and my Grey Cup ring. I stole it, and then I get a call about a week later from the Tie Cats. Somebody had recognized something. It must have been somebody I knew because they dropped it in the mailbox with my watch, and they got it back.
Ooh. How does that story make you feel?
So what's the deal here? I hear stories like this all the time.
Not to you.
You read about this.
Not to you.
I have seven.
Not one.
Seven. Not one seven. Shows up. Like, what's the deal with this?
Like, you were just trying to say you were greedy. You should have just had one.
Someone must really hate me, or else I must have upset so many people through the years winning these Grey Cups.
Do you remember you had a Super Bowl party at some workplace? I can't remember. It was like a graphics place or Spalding Elizik.
Yeah, Spalding Elizik, yes.
There you go. And a big party in the back, and you had the NFL rings in a case. And one of them was William Perry's.
That thing was the size of a horseshoe.
William the Fridge Perry's ring, Super Bowl ring, and you could have fit an entire...
a bicep, a whole arm.
A whole arm through that thing.
Absolutely, you could, yes.
It was ridiculous. Yeah. Well, anyway, thanks for joining us today. Of course, tomorrow is the 102nd Grey Cup. For our American listeners, that's Canada's less annoying version of the Super Bowl.
Oh.
Which, by the way, they're only at number 49.
And by the way, Drew, happy birthday. They're having a Grey Cup on your birthday.
How special is that? Happy birthday.
I've been writing letters to them for years asking it for it to be on my birthday, and finally it happened. Yeah, thank you. Oh, speaking of birthday, Charles, I would like to thank you for the birthday present that you mailed me.
Yes, sir.
He mailed me a lovely card, and it was so funny because Chuck's my investment guy. Sorry, Hank, it's Chuck. And I was opening it up in the house, and I said, wouldn't it be, because you get birthday stuff from your dad, and you always hope there's a little something in there, right? And wouldn't it be good if there's a little something in there from Chuck? There was! He taped a loonie inside the card.
Perfect. That's a good return of your money.
Yeah, that's what he said in the card. Yeah.
Well, mind you, he paid his maintenance fees. His maintenance fees first.
Can we stay focused here, please? So we're going to catch up with these two guys. We're going to try to do it a little less cheesy than Fox Sports and all the hype and music. By the way, that's just getting out of control the way Fox is covering the NFL. I don't get... Like, I am up to here with graphics and swooshes and sound effects and John Tesh music. Ugh. I'm sorry. I'm done. CFL, I can totally handle.
It's turning into a live video.
It's a video
production.
Game.
That's
it's a video. It yes, brutal. Anyway, okay. Best Grey Cup memories. We should probably start with Chuck because Hank has 12 to remember.
Yeah. Obviously, winning the Grey Cup in '72 for me, from that was probably one of the better games that we had. That was quite exciting to me, especially being my first year in Hamilton. So all the things that were happening in the hoopla with it was very unique coming from a university.
Yeah. So hold on, let me get this straight. So it was then right here's the big story that everyone says about you, and it's getting a little tiring here on this show because we talk about you a lot.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, you won every game in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Then you won every game in college, and then the jerks down in the United States of America would not draft you as a quarterback,
right?
Because that was a white man's job,
right, at that time.
And then you said, well, I'm not going to play any other position, so you went to Canada.
Right.
And your first year...
won a Grey Cup.
I hate you.
yeah, well, I always tell people I had to come to Canada to live the American dream and play a quarterback.
It's so weird. Yeah, how many?
It was good.
I mean, even OB came from Butte, Montana.
Yeah.
You know, and now he's up here a complete hoser.
Yeah.
Okay, so Hank, best Grey Cup memory. Best. By the way, can we just, before we get into that, the longest punt ever? Really?
No.
108
Actually,
yards.
Z has the longest.
No, but that's what I'm talking about is... Is you? It should have been you. It really should have been.
Well,
I was in that game when Z kicked that.
Okay, well,
we played. It was during the same game.
It was,
I kicked one. It was 87 in the air. Bennett caught it. When Z punted, it went about 60 yards.
Yeah.
And we let it go, and it didn't stop bouncing.
Right.
And it wound up in a parking lot across the street.
Yeah.
It's like a Forrest Gump move.
Yeah.
What's your best Grey Cup memory?
I'd have to say 1983, my first year here in Toronto.
Wow.
And I'll tell you why.
Why?
Because in Edmonton, I strictly specialized in punting.
Mm.
When I came to Toronto, I started doing the place kicking with the punting duties as well. The Grey Cup in Vancouver against the Lions, I happened to miss 3 field goals that game. I got the last one.
Yeah.
And we won by 1 point.
Mm. Nice.
So,
nice.
It was touch and go there.
Yeah.
The crowd was unbelievable in regards to taunting and booing me.
Yeah.
Like, I tell you what, it was really loud. But then once I got the last field goal in,
you're good.
Quiet.
Mm-hmm.
You could hear a pin drop.
Way to shut up a stadium.
Oh, I tell you what. I looked up and I waved at
him. Oh, nice.
Well, you got as a kicker, you have to do that.
Yeah.
Right? You got to have some swagger. So. Yeah.
Really?
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
You've seen me do that before.
Who was the coach? The coach that busted your backside the most?
You know, I've really been lucky.
Really?
I have.
You've had one jerk coach.
No.
Not even Obilovich.
Absolutely not.
Oh.
Well, here's the thing.
Well,
if you deliver,
and
you do your job, there's no reason for that to happen.
I can't believe Obilovich didn't just string you up, Bob. Why didn't you do that?
He's getting with the pull.
Nice to be bald.
I knew it was a setup.
Come on, Obi, be nice.
I didn't do that because I remember in the game, Hank just told you what happened, and I finally went over and says, Hank, you know, we're going to need those points. This is a tight game. It's a defensive battle, and Hank said to me, and there's a great line, he said, don't worry, coach, I'll make it when it counts, and he did that.
That's so you. That totally came out of your mouth. That is so you.
It was so funny because Obi looked at me. He didn't know what to say after that. And he says, wow, okay.
He just walked away.
Folks, joining our conversation, the one and only Bob Obilovich, a Grey Cup winning CFL player, administrator, scout, assistant coach, head coach, general manager, Ottawa Rough Riders, Toronto Argonauts, Calgary Stampeders, BC Lions, Hamilton Tiger Cats. Just retired from the CFL very recently, and now he's going to take over the job as the boss of the Toronto Maple Leafs and turn them into a winning squad. Good luck with that, Obi.
I was never a really good skater. I don't know about that.
No. Yeah, they didn't do much skating in Butte, Montana, did they?
Oh, yeah.
Well, they did, actually. There were
really?
Some good skaters there. Actually, a guy that was a very good hockey player in Butte, and everybody remembers him as a daredevil, was Evel Knievel.
Oh, yeah. He was a good hockey player.
But
he must have been a goalie.
I had trouble skating because I was bow-legged.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you walked around like Mel Stevens from Teen Ranch.
That's it.
Well, listen, Bob, appreciate it. You're actually in Vancouver as we speak. Is that right?
That's correct. We just finished attending the AIA breakfast, and it was very well done, as always. And Michael Clements did a great job with Mark Washington, and heard some great testimonies. And they honored Wally Buono and his wife, Sandy. They gave him their annual award, Legendary AIA Banquet Award, and it was very a nice morning.
Now, for our listeners who don't know what AIA is, it sounds like something you should take medication for. What is that?
Athletes in Action. I'm sorry, I should have said that.
That's okay. You know, when I think of Athletes in Action, of course...
Everybody probably went and got a drink when I said that.
Yeah, that's right. That was good. That was good, Ovi. When I think of AIA, the first name that comes to mind is Gordy Barwell.
Yep.
You know, was he not one of the first guys or founders of the thing?
Yeah, he was, and one of the chaplains, and got things started with the program.
Of course, Gord died at too young of an age of cancer, and his son Jay and I grew up together at Teen Ranch a lot of years ago. Obi, of all your Grey Cup festivities and times and memories, I know you've spent a lot of money in therapy trying to forget Hank Elissek, but do you have any good memories of the Grey Cup?
Actually, all my memories of Hank are good because we won. I mean, if we hadn't won, I might have had some worse memories. that game was very special. I think everybody knows that Toronto hadn't won a Grey Cup in 31 years, and we won it, and we won it out there in a hostile area. That was BC's first Grey Cup with the new stadium, and their fans used to be just nuts in there. That crazy George would make it so loud.
Oh, yeah.
And our guys competed the way they did, and I remember, Hank would probably tell you this, that they had us 11-0 at the half, and I remember I went and told the guys, I said, you know, it doesn't matter who's winning at the end of the first half, it's who's leading at the end of the second half, so let's go out and win this football game, and we did.
Coach, have you ever... I'm just calling him Coach all of a sudden here. By the way, I got to say, one of my best tryouts, I didn't make the show, but one of my best tryouts was with Ottawa and Adam Rita. He was so nice to me. He phoned me up. I'd gone down to a kicker's camp down in Nevada. Who's that? Do you remember you...
Pelfrey,
that's right.
Yeah. I used to all those all the time.
So, and Z got me started in the whole thing, and then, of course, that meant I was, you know, I had to buy the boot with the front, you know, square toe on it, which then I found out there were other freaks that wore that boot. Right, Hank?
Absolutely, yeah, but yeah. I tied mine up, though.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, you had the fans over the front.
I looked like one of those clowns.
Totally, and that had nothing to do with the boot.
Absolutely not.
Coach, of all the moments dealing with kickers, have you ever just lost your emotional status at a kicker? Because you see that on television all the time. Even guys grabbing the face mask, you know, coaches grabbing the mask of the kick, the bar, the single bar of the kicker, and being angry at them. Did that ever happen to you, Coach?
No, not with a kicker. Not with any player, actually. I might have
you defined that, LB.
I was a pretty competitive guy in my own right, but I think that, you know, when you go through those situations, you know what the circumstances are, and I'd been there as a player, and I don't think any player does something on purpose. Sometimes things just happen, and you know, that's the nature of the beast at different times. But I think I always tried to respect the players, and I wanted the players to respect me, and I don't think you can get respect if you don't give respect.
Well, folks, we're in the studio here with Chuck Ealy, Hank Elissek, and on the phone with Bob Obilovich, a little bit of a CFL Grey Cup tribute. Of course, tomorrow is the 102nd Grey Cup. And we were all there for the 100th Grey Cup. Remember Hank and I walking around the streets looking at the crazy crowd and all the stuff that was going on, and then, of course, the game. And Coach, I got to say, as far as people having been involved in the game the longest, does anybody come to mind that has been in the game longer than you?
I don't know. That's a good question because there's a lot of guys that had long careers in the CFL, as well as myself. When I think of Ralph Sejo, who was responsible for bringing me to Toronto as the head coach, and He had an outstanding long career with the CFL, but I don't know if it was as long as the one I had. You'd have to go back and check on that. But, you don't realize it at the time. I know when I announced my retirement, I started thinking back and, kind of gathering my thoughts. And all of a sudden, I start realizing that, there were a lot of years that went under the bridge there. The water went under the bridge from... all those years and all those memories. And, my life, when I came to Canada in 1963 as a player, my life really became the CFL. I was blessed mm-hmm. and met my wife, Judy, in Ottawa, which was a result of being there for the playing football. And all our children were born in Ottawa. And she's just been the greatest person I've ever had in my life. I've always said that I've been blessed with the best, and so the CFL brought all that and made that all happen. I mean, God made it all happen, but it was the CFL had a lot to do with it as far as making it a platform for me to be able to, do those kind of things with someone else that meant so much.
All right, so I want to bring Chuck in this conversation because, mm-hmm. Coach, you would have been around in the day when they brought Chuck up from the States,
yep.
right?
Yeah, I remember it well.
You were at Ottawa, weren't you, assistant coach there?
Yes, yeah.
So was it, I wasn't around. I'm about 53 years younger than both you guys.
How come you're old enough to hold this show?
but what I want to know is, that we I don't think I will ever grasp the concept of the racial tension of back in that day. Mm-hmm. And so when Chuck, we just talked about this before you joined us, Bob. Chuck won all the high school games. He won all the college games.
Yeah.
Couldn't get drafted because he's a black guy. He comes up here into Toronto. And or to Canada and makes it. Was it a big stink that he was coming up as a quarterback?
No, that wasn't, because the CFL they accepted quarterbacks. They didn't care about their their race or mm-hmm. any of that kind of stuff. There were a lot of good black quarterbacks. Warren Moon was a great quarterback in the CFL as a black quarterback.
And Conridge, don't forget Conridge.
Yeah, well, Conridge,
you know what?
And
you know what happened is I came up when Ralph was recruiting me here. One of the questions, actually, there's a DVD coming out or a movie coming out with Bernie Custis, and he was telling me that he said, you're not the first black quarterback up here. And I said, well, that's great. It's good news, because there was never an issue, and it was Bernie Custis. And who was the quarterback at Montreal, Obi?
Sandy Stevens.
Sandy Stevens.
Sandy
Stevens was there as well. So I said, that was great because he was – and Bernie's still around, and there's a story coming out that you'll see on the TV or on the big screen. I don't know which one. And a lot of us are in there. Conridge is in there, Ward Mood, myself.
I just talked to Conridge the other day, actually. He's doing well down there in Tennessee. And
is he still
doing – he's 14 years old now, and –
okay.
He's trying to encourage him to play baseball, but he wants to play football.
Yeah, no.
Now, okay, we got to get a little bit of advice here, and then we'll get you off the phone, Obi. I know you got a lot of stuff going on over there in Vancouver, and they want you everywhere for autographs. I know what it's like. So tomorrow, the big game, Calgary and Tennessee, is it? Who's the other? I don't know who the other team is. Hamilton, that's right. So last year on the show, this time last year, we had Ken Austin talking to us the day before the big Grey Cup, which is why he's not doing it this year, because he blames the fact that he was on this show the day before the game last and their loss.
You get the superstition.
So, as a coach, let's say it was you in Ken Austin's place. Where would your head?
I think he's in a great position as a coach because everybody's talking about Calgary's record and how good they were. And
16-3 and versus 10-9.
Well, Hank will remember when I was with Ottawa in 1981, we finished the third in the division with a 5-11 record, went down and played, beat Montreal. They came up. We finished second with a 5-11 record. The East was pretty bad that year, and beat Montreal at home, went down and beat Hamilton, who I think was 12-6 at the time. We played Edmonton in the Grey Cup. They were 14-1-1, and they were 28-point favorites, and we had them 20-1 at the half.
I remember that game very well, yes.
Yeah, JC they Watts. Pulled it out in the second half. They changed quarterbacks, put Lone in for a rookie, and the kicker, I forget his name.
Cutler question.
Right.
Yeah, Cutler. He kicked the winning field goal to beat us 26-23. And so
kickers,
I think it's a good situation when you're like that, because I think everybody's expecting the favorites to dominate. Even when we went out to play BC that year in 1983, because they were the home team and all that kind of stuff, but you know, they were favored, and it looked at the end of the first half like they were right. But it's a good position to be in. I think Coach Austin will have his team ready to play, and I know the guys are excited about the opportunity to redeem themselves from last year's Grey Cup.
Yeah. First of all, you should be a color commentator, because you can throw down numbers and stats and references like nobody else, man. It's like talking to Rain Man. You're unbelievable. This is great.
That's what my wife says all the time. She's so tired of hearing all
that. That's what coaches are.
Yeah, that's right. All right, Chuck?
Coach, I want to ask you a question, because, you know, my first year in 72 when I came here, it was the last of the two-game total points before you went to the Grey Cup. And we had to play Ottawa twice. Ottawa, you guys came down and kicked our butt here in Hamilton.
Yep.
And we had to go back to Ottawa to qualify to beat you guys. Yep. We were down, 21-7 or 24-7? Anyway, what my thought is, when I had to go back and do that, it says, what did you guys think about as coaches before that, at that second game? What was your thought when you were up?
Well, that was always a tough one, because I went through several of those, and some of them we won and some we lost, unfortunately. And we were favored because we had, you know, built a good lead and ended up losing and not going to the Grey Cup. We probably should, when I was in Toronto, we probably should have played in about three other Grey Cups that we didn't, because of those kind of situations. But you had to try and block out the score. I know we used to emphasize that don't even talk about the score, because you know, you didn't want our players looking too far ahead of if you had a lead or not. And I remember, I thought we made a mistake one year. Ralph thought might be good psychic. He decided to put the score up on the scoreboard so that any points as they were scored, it would build on your lead. And I think it backfired, and that motivated them more than it did us. It just made us maybe a little more complacent.
Mm-hmm.
And the other team got more fired up by it. So I used to feel like it was best not to even think about what happened and just treat that game like it was another game and that you had to win.
Right.
Why'd you bring that up?
No, I was just curious, because it was the last time they had a two-game total points.
Oh, right.
It was very interesting concept, because I had never played the same team twice to get qualified for the Grey Cup.
Right.
And what happened. And we were behind. We had won all of our games up to that point.
Yeah.
And then we got whacked out on the first part of it. I went, uh-oh. You know, it's over. But we had a chance to come back.
Question.
And when you're coming from the States and you've never been involved with something like that, even in the CFL, like the East was the only division that used the total point series, because the West used to always play 2 out of 3. So it was different, and then they finally standardized it for everybody.
Obi, what year was that when we had the two-game total point against Hamilton? We were up about 40 points after the first game. And it all went downhill. I had a snap come to me on a punt.
Yep.
The snap was about 40 yards, by the way.
That's the longest snap I've ever seen.
Absolutely. All I could do was turn around right away.
Run after it. Way you go.
I can't remember if I got to her, if I kicked her through the end zone. I can't remember.
No, I got you stopped it. I don't know. You fell on about the 1 yard line, and that got him back into the game.
That was downhill after that.
Yeah.
No, that was. Now I'm thinking about the exact year that was. That might have been 86. It was somewhere in there.
It was two-game total point. Yes, it was.
In 86?
Yes, and we were up by 40 points after the first game. That much.
Yeah.
And we lost it.
Yeah, it was amazing. I'll never forget. That was the play that started the downhill slide, though, was that snap. But to this day, I always said that's the longest snap I've ever seen in my life.
Well, the hardest hit I ever had as a punter was when our third down center, who got drafted by Montreal, shot one 800 feet above my head, and I went after it like you did. And by the time I put my hand on that ball, I had four guys on me, and the replay shows me spinning flat on the ground. I was laying flat on the ground. They hit me so hard, I spun around in a circle. I came up shaking my dentures. You know, it was like a cartoon
character. Well, you know, there was a story to that snap. We had a very good long snapper named Steve Delco that was been doing it for us, and we developed him into a long snapper. He was originally a defensive end.
Yeah.
And Steve got hurt in that first game down in Hamilton, so we had to go to our backup, who was a young rookie by the name of Dan Pechnik, who had never snapped before in his life. And he was learning now, was doing a pretty good job of developing the skill and everything, but we were all holding our breath in the game, and then he just got all tensed up and got all excited on that snap that he had to make right before the half, and holy cow, it went right out of the stadium there. It was like one of those fireworks things, a Roman candle or something.
Top of his head.
Oh, man. Well, listen, Coach, I really appreciate you joining us for this bit of time. I know you got a busy day, and I hope you enjoy I hope you enjoy the festivities. Ladies and gentlemen, Coach Bob Obilovich. You know what? I told a few people who was coming on the show today. You know, we had some big names. We got Mark Osborne. We got Val Burre. We got Clint Malarchuk, NHL hockey guys. We got Hank Olisek, Chuck Ealy, Bob Obilovich. Nobody cared about any of those guys. When I said Bob Obilovich, people just got silly. Got silly.
Oh, I'm sure Hank and Chuck were great players in our league and did our league a lot of good. So I'm happy. I was very honored to be inducted into the Hall of Fame for next year. And
good.
Going in with my fellow Montanan, Dave Dickinson, it's kind of a special thing, so we're having a great time out here right now, and I appreciate you taking the time to give us a call.
Yeah, it was great. Thanks, Coach. Say hi to Kent and Shelley if you see them, Kent and Shelley Austin, and have a great time, okay?
I just saw them this morning. If you'd have called me earlier, I'd have told them that.
Yeah. All right,
Coach. Thanks, Obi. Appreciate it.
Okay, good talking to you guys.
Take care. Yeah, bye-bye.
Enjoy.
Wow. We had Obi booked last year. For the same kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a no-show.
Oh.
Yeah, no-show. Well, you were booked last year, too. Mm-hmm. But you made it.
I made it.
You don't have a life.
No, I don't have a life.
Are you retired?
No, I'm not totally retired. I'm retired from management. I went on the management side of things. And
folks,
back
in case you don't hear the difference between the voices, we're talking to Chuck Ealy here.
Yeah,
and
okay.
You're an investors group money guy, right?
Well, yeah. I mean,
I'm all about money, Chuck.
No, I'm all about planning, now that we put it that way. And if the money comes, that's fine. But there's other things besides money.
Yeah.
But it's good. It's keep me busy. I've worked long and hard years, and so I just backed away from all the heavy duty stuff and just dealt in coaching what I call coaching people more so than anything. You've helped me.
You remember how smart I sounded in the last conversation we had?
That's what I said. Yeah, you scared me.
This is not the Drew Marshall I know.
Where are you coming from?
Okay. Did you ever think about doing the coaching thing? And you know, after
no, I think for most quarterbacks. For most quarterbacks outside of Kent, who's it, Calgary?
The other quarterback who's now
Huffnagel.
Coach?
Huffnagel.
Yeah, quarterbacks. Very few quarterbacks normally go into that coaching field because you get so tired of it after you've been on the field and doing it for so long.
Yeah.
Many of us just say, you know what, let's walk away from that side of coaching. For me, that's like – but I don't mind working with kids and young kids and just sort of giving them lead and stuff. But to do it every day, watch film and get involved all the time, no. Not me.
Not going to happen, no. How about you, Hank? Well, you are coaching.
I'm coaching at Guelph, University of Guelph, with Stu Lang.
Stu
Lang is a head coach.
That's where he ended up.
That's where he is. He's hiding. He's head coach.
I haven't heard his name in a long time.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We've had a good year this year.
Unfortunately,
we're not playing in the venue today.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
We lost a couple weekends ago to McMaster. 20-15.
How do you feel about that?
Oh, I'm just burn up inside right now.
Not good. I can tell you. I had that conversation with him already.
Chuck and I were talking. Do you call that a green room back here? It didn't look green, but I'll call it a green room anyway.
Yeah, lunch room.
And Chuck and I had a good conversation about that game.
And now, as far as you sort of moving on into other things, you've done a few things post-CFL, right?
Absolutely, yes. Well, you have to. Especially as a kicker, you usually have a lot of time to...
To think?
To diversify.
Oh, is that what we're saying?
We call it diversification, yes.
I just thought of another name, Bob Bronk. What happened to him?
Bob's still in town. I I don't know exactly what work he's doing now.
He's a smart guy.
He's teaching. He's a bright guy. Very bright.
I think
obviously he wasn't a kicker.
Child Vision, I think. What's
World Vision?
World Vision.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
He was doing some work there.
That's
right.
Who he's with, yes.
Okay. Are you in touch with many of the guys you played with? Hank, are you in touch with Lance Chomick, for example?
Actually, yes. Yeah. I do.
He's a teacher.
Yes, he is up in Barrie.
Okay.
That's where he is.
All right. Any other guys that you know, names people would know? They'd, oh, yeah, we go out.
Don Moon, Dan Ferroni, Chris Schultz, Matt Dunnigan.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in touch with some of them, but it's not like you're seeing them like buddies all the time. It's kind of things we cross over, whether it be a game, whether it be an event, a charitable event for golf or something. And sometimes when you go to alumni and things that involve Hamilton with some of the guys I play with at Hamilton and then some of the guys I play at Toronto. We fortunately live here. We could be an alumni on either side of those teams.
Now, you have a relative who also played in the CFL, a son-in-law.
Yeah.
Orlando Bowen.
Right.
How long did Orlando play?
He played four years, I think.
Right.
You know, off and on without some injuries.
Okay.
But he played Hamilton and Toronto as well.
And Orlando and your daughter came on our show a little while ago, shared some of their story.
Yep.
Boy, tough thing that they went through.
Yep.
I don't want to talk too much about that. I just personally want to ask, is that resolved and settled and done?
Oh, yeah, that's all resolved and settled.
Has the cop been reprimanded?
He's in jail now.
He's in jail.
Yeah, I think they finally sentenced the issue. He was on suspension for a while until they cleared everything, and I think they finally have put him in jail.
Wow, unbelievable, man.
Yep.
Well, I'm glad that's behind
you. But it was a really interesting thing to go through as you're watching some of the stuff.
Should we just let our listeners know a little bit about it concisely?
Just to you know that. My son-in-law had some issue with the police officers.
A cop beat the crap out of him for no reason.
Okay. And, you know, it's kind of interesting seeing the situation. I don't want to get into it too technical, but in the States and seeing some of the excuses of some of the things that happened with the kid in Ferguson.
Yeah.
And hearing some of the stuff here, the same scenario words come out. You know, this guy was really big when they're really big. This guy was mean looking when they're really mean. You know, so you kind of hear the same scenario and you kind of wonder, what is this?
Okay. So as an awkward white guy, speaking on behalf of myself.
Yeah.
I can't talk a lot about the Ferguson thing.
Yeah.
What do I know?
Yes, you can.
What do I know?
You don't have to know
anything.
Dude,
you lived through it, man.
Oh, yeah. I lived through some of that in the States already. So you kind of experience some of that. And then the first thing I want to say to people, oh, police officers are not bad. You have some people that are bad, you know, and it happens that way.
Yeah.
But it is a little more racially tense in the States when I grew up at that time. You know, I haven't lived there for years. So, but when you see some of these things, it kind of takes you back, and you just try to reflect on those things that you know. Don't try to be judgmental, but try to understand on both sides of the fence. But at the same time, you see the circumstances that just don't add up, you know, with these things that happened. But unfortunately for us, it worked out. It was resolved.
Did you have any racial stuff go down, like people calling you names, whatever?
Oh, please.
No, I meant up here when you got into the CFL.
Oh, no. It was funny because I'm working on a speech where I'm talking to somebody about CAPS, Canadian Association of Professional Speakers.
Yeah.
And I'm speaking, and one of the things that I was doing in the thought process is that the things did not happen here. Mm. And that's why I said I had to come to Canada to live the American dream to play quarterback. And there was never any
garbage.
Thought at all or problem with that move at all.
Yeah.
Never felt any of that. But you felt it pretty strongly in the States until you knew it and you knew what was happening. And you understood it. And it's kind of like one of those things what Bernie Custis was saying, too. You knew it, but you didn't want to believe it, and you tried to sort of wrestle through it, but you never could win through it.
Did you say wrestle?
Wrestle. Well, so what? That's my Southern accent, man. I still have some of that left.
Yeah. All right. I want to go back to the kicker thing just for a second because, you know, we've got a quarterback and a kicker in the same room here. And that relationship on the field is unique in many ways, but it's unique from the point of view that you also held – for a lot of kickers, right?
I held for one kicker.
Z. One kicker.
Z.
Is it a, oh, seriously?
Oh, Z.
What? You just made a face.
No, I know.
You made a face.
No, Z's very meticulous about you holding the ball. When you laces got to be this way or that way.
Really?
It can't be this way. Oh, yeah. Because he could kick with the laces out towards the goal, Or if it faced him, he could kick.
Hold on now. I just realized our listeners don't know who Z is. So we're talking about a guy named
Zenon Andrusicin.
Zenon Andrusicin, which is now you know why we call him Z, because that's just too much time to take on someone's name.
Yeah.
And that's the only guy you ever held for.
That's the only guy I ever held for. And it was only because somebody else didn't do it.
Was he weird? Because he's a kicker?
No. Z was probably the straightest of most kickers I've ever seen.
Straightest?
In the sense that he wasn't weird and quiet and side on the side. He's involved in trying to get in play like Hank and sort of do some athletic stuff.
Yeah.
Where a lot of kickers just hang out.
Yeah. You know, sipping tea on the sidelines.
You know? And then they kick and they just go sit down.
But my memory of Z, correct me if I'm wrong, though. My memory of Z is he is just a little. Just a little.
What were they hanging him? They were hanging him in effigy at UCLA.
What?
Because he missed a kick or something. UCLA, you don't miss a kick there.
It was an extra point, I think.
It was an extra point or something. Extra point.
You know, we should clear it up. Z, where was that that actually happened?
UCLA.
I really wanted you to just say something bad about Z.
I wanted to say something bad about Z.
Say something bad about Z. Oh, man.
I know you always try to set somebody up.
Folks on the phone, Zenon Andrusicin, the guy that got me kicking a football 100 years ago, and the guy who gave birth to Hank Olisek, because they're both so ridiculously the same in their kicking styles and mental space as well. You guys are both crazy Europeans. Hank, when was the last time you talked with Z?
Z, what? I'd say probably maybe 20, 25 years
ago. No way.
Absolutely, yes.
Hank, Z, Hank.
Yeah, somebody asked me if Hank was my illegitimate child.
You know, there's no straight toe kickers anymore, right? That thing is just like an 8-track player. It's gone.
They've been sent out of the country.
Yeah.
They've been deported. They sent them back home.
Oh, man. Were you the last one, Hank? Were you the last straight toe?
Yes, I was.
Who else was? Was there anybody else kicking straight toe when you were kicking straight toe?
Well, Dave Cutler and also Zenon.
You guys didn't play at the same time.
Yes,
we
did.
No, Z's like 30 years older than you.
No. Z, when's your last year, CFL?
1986.
We played against each other.
Oh, yeah, because you started when you were like 14 or something, right?
My rookie year. Yeah. It was 1977, my rookie year.
Yeah.
Wow.
He's a puppy.
And how about you guys? When was the last time, Chuck, you talked to Z?
It's been a while. Well, last time Z was here in town. I mean, like, not what you mean, football-wise. It was, you know, a few years ago, wasn't it, Z? When you were up for your
3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah. So Z,
I'm not on Facebook. Z's on Facebook with my kids and people. I'm not on there, so I don't get to hear all the messages.
Chuck's a little socially unaware.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Z, were you really that pedantic with how the ball should be held?
Well, you have to be if you're a straight-on kicker. Yeah. If the ball is with the laces are to the right or to the left, it will make the ball fade that way. And so you want the laces forward or back towards you.
I told you, I got that right. I turned that thing for him.
Did you ever get ticked off at Chuck because he just wasn't listening? He didn't do it right?
So Chuck was a good holder. The worst holder I ever had is Conrad Holloway.
There you go.
But Conrad cost me my job. His holds were so terrible. But as a kicker, and I know Hank would know this, you can't ever blame the holder for a missed kick. I mean, that just doesn't go over real well.
No.
They always blame the last person that touched the ball.
Yeah.
So in the field goal, that would be us.
That'd be you guys. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Part of the game.
Z, what happened? How did you get booted out of Toronto?
Booted out of Toronto? I think it was I didn't have a real good relationship with Obilovich.
He's gone now.
He's not on the phone. We're not setting anyone up.
No, that's okay. No, I just think I was in his type of kicker or whatever you want to call it, and I think it was just I'd been there 11 years. I mean, I'd been there one of the longest stays of any player, and I think it was just about that time where he just, you know, I missed a kick. That was one of Connor Callaway, and he called me up to, you know, we're just going to make a change.
Right.
Brought in some University of Toronto kicker. I think he lasted about a year, and I was there half a year.
Do you know
that? That was Dean Dorsey.
Dean Dorsey.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Good hockey player, by the way.
Now, many folks don't realize this, but Z, you actually were quite proficient in another sport. It was javelin catching. What was it again?
Javelin catching. No, javelin. Discus and shot put, but mostly javelin.
And did you actually win any awards?
I did. I won the national championship. for men. Right. I set a national record. I represented Canada in the British Empire Games. I was getting ready to go to the Olympics, and I hurt my arm, and that was the end of my career. And that's when I turned to kicking a football when, you know, my dad said, look, go out and try out for the UCLA football team. I said, well, Dad, they already got like 9 kickers. He says, doesn't matter. Just go out. I know you can beat them all. So I went out and I kicked. I impressed the coach in the blue goal game. I kicked a 62-yard field goal. And he came running over to me and said, I think we found ourselves a kicker. You know?
We were talking earlier about the longest punt heard around the world. And Hank just seems to think that it really wasn't that big of a deal because it rolled 80% of the way, didn't it?
You know, that kick, it's interesting that you said that because in the game that I kicked, that kick was against Edmonton Eskimos. And Hank was in that game. Do you remember that, Hank?
Yes, and I kicked the one before you. And actually, Paul Bennett caught the ball in the air. It went 87 yards.
Right.
And Paul
caught
it. And
then I followed up with another kick, and it went... I actually have the video of it. It went 94 yards in the air.
Really? Okay.
We're going to court over this one, folks. Bring the evidence.
I have the video. And it went over their heads, and it hit into about 4 yards in the end zone. Kicked from the 20, I think it was like the 22-yard line, and the ball rolled through the end zone and kept going, which really made me mad because I could have had a few extra yards.
Yeah.
I ran back to the sidelines. The coach, Leo Cahill was a coach.
Yep.
I ran up there. I just set a Canadian football record. Isn't that great? And he goes, shut up. We're losing 14-7.
You know, the only prize I ever won at all playing football, I got Player of the Game Award, was from a punt that went over the receiver's heads and rolled for about 1,000 yards. And I got a free pair of shoes from Adidas or Nike or something. I don't know. That's it. By the way, speaking of awards... Hank was telling us, we actually had to stop him because he kept going on and on and on about all these Grey Cup rings he has. What is it, 14, 17? How many did you have, Hank?
Played in 9 Grey Cups.
9 Grey Cups.
Played in 9.
Oh, yeah.
Won 7.
Won 7.
Yes.
Okay, we want to clear that up. Z, how many did you win?
You know, that's been the story of my life.
Don't mess with him.
You had the one in Edmonton, though.
You're cruel, man.
Zenon, you got the one in Edmonton.
I've been so, you know, UCLA, we're playing for the national championship. We lose 21-20. So 2 years later, we're playing again for the championship. We lose to USC 14-12. The coach wouldn't have even let me kick an extra point in that game, so he just tried to go for 2-pointers. We go into pro football, first year Calgary against Toronto. Leon McQuay's running in the end zone to win the Grey Cup. You know, he hits the ground, fumbles the ball, we lose. We lose the game and with 2 minutes to go. Then I go on. I played with Edmonton when Hank was trying to get some more money, and they still gave me all my money and all my, you know, I got all the benefits of being a Grey Cup champion, except I did not get a ring because I was going to the USFL. Then I go to the USFL. We're going for the championship. We lose the championship in Oakland. I missed out a ring then. Then I go on. I'm playing for the arena football team. I'm the chaplain. The team wins the world championship. Everybody gets a ring, and the owner comes here and says, you know, we just don't give our chaplains rings.
You're like a walking country song, man. This is unbelievable.
So when Hank tells me he has 7 rings and 9 Grey Cups, it really, really irks me.
Yeah. Yeah. But you're actually the one that brought me up to speed on the fact that Hank does not have those rings. He knew. He knew they were gone.
Oh.
You know why he knows? We'll talk about that next week. Listen, the reason that you guys are all on today, including OB earlier, is because, honestly, I don't have the time of day. I know everyone's got their own picks and biases, whatever. I don't have the time of day for the NFL. I could watch CFL all day, every day, because the kickers are a big part of it and the quarterbacks are a big part of it. It is a far more interesting and exciting game to watch with 3 downs, the bigger field, the man, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I just think it's a fantastic game because of you guys. Mm-hmm. You know, Chuck, Hank, Z, love it. And of course, OB, you know, I mean, how do you say how do you say a bad word about OB? Eh? Z? How do you do that?
I have no comment.
So listen, guys, I want to thank you all for showing up. It's been a fair chunk of time. This is the longest time you have ever endured me, actually, Chuck, I think.
Yeah, it's been...
You okay?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Chuck's going to start drinking today.
Didn't know if I'm going to make it or not.
And of course, Hank Elisic, Hank and I have known each other for a bit. By the way, Z, are you still in good shape? Because Hank is just jacked, man.
Really? Well...
240 pounds.
I don't know what to say, whether I'm in good shape or not. Let's just say that I'm still can do a few things.
You still look at the grass on this side, so yeah. You're okay.
I can still walk in the weight room with no warm up and do a 315-pound bench press, no warm up.
There it is, beautiful. That's what I was waiting for. Good. All right, guys. Well, tomorrow again, the 102nd Grey Cup Sunday night at kickoff is I think at 6.
And it's Drew's birthday. You want to tweet him a lot tonight.
And it's my birthday tomorrow as well. Thank you very much, Chuck Ely.
Are the Argos in the game?
Oh, stop it. Really? Thanks a lot. I appreciate that. Z, good to chat with you, man. Thanks for,
thanks for being part of the show. Take care.
Guys, thank you very much for coming in. Appreciate that. Folks, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, it's the final part of the Drew Marshall Show. It's called Live on TDMS, devoted solely to the art of music. This week's recording artist is Mr. Bennett, planetbennett.com. This guy is a freak show. He fronts a punk band, and he drops about 1,000 words in one song, backed up by only a ukulele. He's probably one of the most talented guys we've ever had on our show, and quite an enjoyable guest. More on the Drew Marshall Show. Stay with us.
Close your eyes and think of me.
It's hard to find quality guest speakers these days. If they're interesting, they're usually expensive. And if they're cheap, they're usually boring. Well, here's someone who's both expensive and boring. Drew Marshall is a high school dropout who tried to become a pro football player but didn't make it. He then tried to become a firefighter and didn't make it. Now he's trying to become a stand-up comic. Good luck with that, Mr. Marshall. But if you're looking for someone who's unpredictable, incredibly honest, provocative, genuine, then we've got the right guy. Everyone seems to be an expert on something these days. Why not book someone who's an expert on nothing, except how to be brutally honest about yourself and your faith? To book Drew Marshall as your guest speaker, go to drewmarshall.ca. It's hard to find quality guest speakers these days. If they're interesting, they're usually expensive. And if they're cheap, they're usually boring. Well, here's someone who's both expensive and boring. Drew Marshall is a high school dropout who tried to become a pro football player but didn't make it. He then tried to become a firefighter and didn't make it. Now he's trying to become a stand-up comic. Good luck with that, Mr. Marshall. But if you're looking for someone who's unpredictable, incredibly honest, provocative, genuine, then we've got the right guy. Everyone seems to be an expert on something these days. Why not book someone who's an expert on nothing, except how to be brutally honest about yourself and your faith? To book Drew Marshall as your guest speaker, go to drewmarshall.ca.